Remember when you eagerly awaited the broadcast of a Charlie Brown Christmas and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for some good old-fashioned family TV time? Well, there is no more waiting. This is not your grandma's holiday programming. Let's get merry and scary on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is made possible thanks to California Closets, creating functional home offices for those working and learning remotely, offering in-home and virtual consultations. Learn more at californiaclosets.com.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. It used to be the closest we got to weirding ourselves out on a holiday meant for celebrating miracles and cheer was watching Ebenezer Scrooge flying around with ghosts from his past, present, and future. But with the ever-growing popularity of the horror genre, some of you weirdos even favor the macabre, even during a time like Christmas. We'll check in with our resident spooky professor, Kendall Phillips, for some ideas on how to make the merry just a little scarier. But first, can we talk about the explosion of holiday TV programs for a minute? Once upon a time, we'd wait for our favorite Christmas specials like Frosty the Snowman to air, and if we were lucky, we'd get a repeat airing before Christmas Day. And of course, if our favorite sitcom or TV drama had a Christmas episode, well, that was just icing on the cake. Not anymore. This is not your grandma's Christmas TV. Between streaming services and cable channels dedicated to 24-hour holiday content, we have more Christmas shows than we can shake a stick at. Let's check in with Professor Bob Thompson, director of the Blair Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University's Newhouse School, to talk about the explosion in content, who the major players are, and get some ideas for Christmas TV entertainment. So we welcome back to Pop Life the original superstar celebrity guest, Bob Thompson. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, before we get started on our conversation about holiday programming, I wanted to get your thoughts on David Squiggy Lander. He played Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley, a show that was a spinoff from Happy Days. And it was at a time where it seemed like to me, as a culture, we were obsessed with the lifestyle and popular culture of the 50s. What do you remember about David Lander?
Well, it's interesting how the 1970s, you know, TV before the 1970s, with a couple of exceptions, completely ignored the real world. Talking horses, flying nuns, genies, witches, my mother, the car, all that kind of thing. The early part of the 70s, of course, bring us All in the Family, a Mary Tyler Moore Show, MASH, all these programs that start really dealing with contemporary issues. And then the war ends badly, Watergate comes along, and the top 10 positions are taken away from the likes of MASH and All in the Family, with the likes of Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Charlie's Angels, The Love Boat. It was as though the beginning of the 70s, television entertainment started recognizing what had happened in the 1960s. And then in the last half of the 70s, TV decided to make it go away. And Happy Days was set in the 1950s, before the 60s had even happened. Laverne and Shirley set not long thereafter. And Laverne and Shirley, it could as easily been called Lucy and Ethel. It could have actually not only taken place before the 60s as we know them, but it could have taken place when Lucy did.
Yeah.
And of course, with Lenny and Squiggy, you had kind of the male counterparts. You had Laverne and Shirley, the title characters, and Lenny and Squiggy were their even crazier, even more slapstick kind of counterparts who could play kind of the fall guys to Laverne and Shirley's straight men, who were already kind of comic characters. Dave Lander, of course, just passed. It's been noted. He played Squiggy. Lenny, Michael McKean, Michael McKean, of course, has gone on to quite a distinguished body of work afterwards. He's, of course, still with us.
Yeah. So Squiggy, the squeaky voiced, really goofball character, slick back hair. I believe David Lander suffered years with multiple sclerosis.
Right.
So we wish his family well.
He was almost, if Fonzie was the really cool guy in Happy Days with the slick back hair, Squiggy was the kind of Fonzie wannabe.
Exactly.
Who was anything but cool, but he kind of had the look.
Yeah, exactly. So look, I'm glad you joined me. When the last time we got together to talk about Christmas, we talked about Christmas classics, and we talked about movies like A Christmas Carol, and some of the animated specials that were such a large part of our family experiences. These were shows that were scheduled a few weeks out, and in the case of sometimes A Christmas Carol, maybe a few days out from Christmas. And now with the gluttony of holiday-themed content, it's impossible to keep up with. So this is not your grandma's Christmas TV entertainment anymore. We don't have to wait until a handful of networks throw a couple of shows on air. Now you can just turn to almost any network and find this overproduced glutton of content. There's a website out there for this stuff. You know, there's a website devoted to this called ChristmasTVHistory.com, and it's got a list of every single network out there and all of the content and schedules that they air. It's a lot of stuff, Bob.
It is. So there are two reasons why this isn't your grandma's Christmas when it comes to television. Two things that have really changed. The first, which you already mentioned, is the fact that we can now watch this stuff whenever and wherever we want to, for the most part. And the second, as you also mentioned, is the sheer quantity of it. So let's first talk about the scheduling issue. I grew up, I was born in 1959. I was 4 or 5 when Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer first came out. And that was a big deal. You'd see the advertisement for it, and you made a point to be home, not out shopping for Christmas ornaments or not out doing other holiday things, because you didn't want to miss it. And now the networks even play them twice. Back then, Rudolph, Frosty, Grinch, Charlie Brown, they played once and you were out of luck if you didn't see them. That had already begun to change, though, a lot sooner than streaming did. The big revolution that I think a lot of people kind of forget was the video cassette machine, which was the first time you could actually watch something when you wanted to watch it. You could store TV and movies on a shelf like you could books. It's hard to remember when that was. I remember everybody kept telling me, you got to see Citizen Kane, best movie ever made. I wanted to see Citizen Kane. It wasn't playing in the movie theaters. It wasn't playing on television late at night. And it wasn't until the 80s until you actually could get that on cassette and watch it. That was true of holiday specials as well. My generation grew up where you had to watch it when it was on, or you had to wait till the next year. As we got into the late 70s and certainly into the 80s with the VCR, those holiday specials came out on beta and then VHS. I remember one of my nephews, who's now, probably in his late 20s, has his own children. We went to visit them once, and he had the VHS cassette tape of Frosty the Snowman.
Wow.
And our entire visit of 3 days, I want to watch Frosty. He watched that thing 1,000 times during the course of that period. So we had that idea, not when the shows were made, but within a decade and a half, that we could see it elsewhere. Which then brings us to the next point, the quantity. Back then, there were a few classics. You either watched them when they were on, or you got the tapes and you showed them to your kids on tape. And all of those became classics because they were finite. There were, you know, a handful of them. Then we started moving into the later decades of the century, and certainly when we get into the 21st century, where this became such a huge business. Cable allowed more places for it to happen. Streaming allowed an infinite number of places for it to happen. So that Hallmark has got hundreds of these things that they've made since 2009, when Countdown to Christmas started. Lifetime is trying to get up to that status. Netflix has now gotten into the business. All of these different places are making TV specials. And of course, you can then watch them online. The question is, with so much of it, it's going to be really hard to generate those classics. We're still watching those ones from the 60s because they had several generations to build up the status of tradition. You know, I'm not sure that the, since we started this conversation, Hallmark has probably made two more Christmas
movies. Well, you know, it's, you make a great point, with so much stuff. It's tough to see how any of them break out, and really get into, the public consciousness to become a new classic. But let's take some of these, networks, one by one. So Hallmark, as you mentioned, one of the first to do it. One of the first to broadcast this stuff almost 24 hours a day. So they are offering 23 new shows for this year alone.
And 17 on their other Hallmark channel, so 40 total.
Yeah, so that started October 24. They're airing all day and night through the end of December. And then, as you mentioned, they're also showing content on their sister channel, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. They'll have some new movies and some classics as well. And then you have Lifetime, who's kind of challenging what Hallmark is doing. Not to be outdone by Hallmark, they're doing introducing 34 new Christmas movies in 2020. Those will air Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. So these are the two main players where pretty much any time of day you want, you can go there and you can pull up some holiday stuff.
And think about that for a second. Just Lifetime and Hallmark. 23 on Hallmark Channel, 17 more. These are all new ones on their sister channel. What did you say, 34 on Lifetime? That's 74 brand spanking new Christmas movie-length features in 2020, a year when production was shut down. Yeah. And then they can fill that with their backlog of any. That is an astounding amount of – can you think of any other subject it comes close to having 74 movies every year based on it? And I'm thinking of, you know, big subject. That's a lot of movies. That's a lot of content.
What does that say to you? Are they, is this a chicken and egg thing? Are they producing all of this stuff in hopes that we will consume it? Or is there real demand for new and fresh content?
Well, you'd think the saturation point would have come, but apparently it hasn't yet. Hallmark lives for November and December, like the retail shopping industries live for November and December. They do very, very well, as do those Lifetime. The reason we keep seeing them is Hallmark starts doing it in 2009, I think was their first one. And it was so successful that, needless to say, they kept doing it and they increased their output and people kept watching them. Lifetime would not have imitated Hallmark had Hallmark not been being really successful. And Netflix wouldn't have imitated the both of them if they hadn't worked. So far, it seems this appetite for a kind of schmaltzy, sentimental, traditional celebrations of romantic love and of home and of
family dysfunction,
old-fashioned family values, all this kind of stuff seems to be almost insatiable.
Yeah.
And eventually, I think, I don't think this level of production can keep up indefinitely, but I didn't think it could keep up nearly as long as it has.
Yeah. You do have to wonder where the point of diminishing returns is. So let's go down into some more niche categories. AMC, the American Movie Classics, they're going to do classic animation from Rankin-Bass, some of our favorites from our childhoods, and classic movies as well. And it's a part of their Best Christmas Ever celebration. They'll show new classics like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, one of my favorites, which is Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon.
No swaddle cloth here. This thing isn't big enough to swaddle the baby.
Someone's got to carry the performance here.
I'm nervous, Brett. I can't feel my legs. Please don't do this to me.
It would appear that my wife is better at making babies than swaddling them, no? Yes?
You're wearing the swaddle cloth on your belt.
Woman, do your job and swaddle this baby!
Brad, I can't. You're wearing the swaddle thing around your belt.
Enough! This child's life is now in jeopardy. Unfit mother, give me this baby. And I, Joseph, shall swaddle this baby. And I, Joseph, will protect this child.
I do like the funny movies that are sort of non-traditional, that don't get into, you know, big heavy messages of Christmas miracles and things like that. And the Vince Vaughn Reese Witherspoon movie does it for me every time. It's hilarious. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Oh yeah, that's a fine movie. Yeah. By the way, AMC has, I think, exclusive TV rights to that Christmas Vacation for Christmas. I think. Mm-hmm. Also, Polar Express, they're playing. Mm-hmm. Love Actually, which I can live without. Jack Frost, yeah, a bunch of those other Rankin Bass type of things. So, yeah, they're really jumping into this as well. And, of course, all the rerun channels, the MeTVs,
are
digging up all the Christmas episodes for all of the old shows they have rights to. But, once again, that's nothing new. Nickelodeon, Nick at Night's part of Nickelodeon, and then TV Land, were doing that way back, probably in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And then they're spinning some things off into some of their other properties. So like in AMC's case, they're going to be doing a Walking Dead holiday special, which will be hosted by Chris Hardwick, featuring cast members from the show, from the series. That's going to air December 13. I guess Santa gets bitten by a walker and then visits children and devours them. I don't know what they're going to do with this thing.
it's the same old thing, just more and more and more of it, because there's more of those to play it. 1978, Star Wars did a holiday special. They couldn't call it a Christmas special because there was no Christmas in the part of the galaxy that it takes place. But and I've got to say, as bad as that Walking Dead special sounds in theory, it couldn't be worse than the 1978 Star Wars special, which has been homaged, by the way, this year in the Lego Star Wars holiday special, brand new, which is getting way better reviews than the first one did.
Yep, we're gonna talk about that too. That is going to be coming up on some of the other, on the streaming, when we get to streaming. This content is just coming at you, streamers. So Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and others are getting in on the action. Netflix is getting in beyond the movies and television shows that are storytelling. They're tapping into like food TV networks territory. They have new shows for the Great British Baking Show. They're also doing Sugar Rush Christmas season 2. Say that quickly 3 times. So they're getting into some of the food TV stuff to celebrate the holidays. And then, as you mentioned, they're doing the Lego Star Wars holiday special where Darth Vader beheads Santa Claus with a lightsaber, I guess. I don't know. I don't know that for a fact. I just know it's true. So there's a lot coming from the streamers. One that I'm actually really looking forward to watching, I haven't seen it yet, but it's on a lot of people's list of favorite things out right now, is Jingle Jangle.
Once upon a time, lived the greatest inventor that ever there was, Jeronicus Jangle.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas indeed!
Jangle, for the last 30 years, you've been promising something sensational.
I need more time.
Either come up with the money you've borrowed by Christmas, or show me the revolutionary invention you once promised.
I would lose everything.
What's wrong, Grandpa?
Had a perfect life, loving family, and a magical shop, till an old friend took it all. But he didn't get this.
Young lady.
If I know anything about your grandfather, that's something.
Stars Forrest Whitaker, Keegan-Michael Key, Felicia Rashad. It's an imaginary world comes to life in a holiday tale of an eccentric toy maker, his adventurous granddaughter, and a magical invention that has the power to change their lives forever.
That one actually looks like a really good production. I watched the trailer a couple of times, and I like the special effects. I like the acting so far, just from what I can see on the trailer. What are you thinking? Have you seen Jingle Jangle? Is that one you'd put on your list?
Yeah, I have seen it. Jingle Jangle, A Christmas Adventure. And by the way, it's got a pretty decent pedigree, too. It's written and directed by David Talbert, who also wrote and directed the 2016 film Almost Christmas. That was a feature film, a theatrical release, which I think was a very good Christmas film as well. A family coming together. Danny Glover was the widower, patriarch of the family. And Jingle Jangle is an all-out, full production musical. I mean, there is choreography. There's all of this stuff. Keegan-Michael Key is the bad guy, and he's really funny and really good at it. There's some good songs. It's a typical schmaltzy Spirit of Christmas kind of story. But schmaltz is not a bad thing. If we're watching, you know, an episode of some new streaming drama and it gets sentimental and schmaltzy, we give it the thumbs down. If we're watching a Christmas movie and it doesn't get sentimental or schmaltzy, we've usually got a problem with that. Even Bad Santa managed to do that. Even National Lampoon, those kind of funny things. So Jingle Jangle is, it's really old school in its approach, but I think really successful Christmas things have almost by definition got to be old school.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly why we go to them.
One of the things that we'll explore in the next segment that I think is a positive thing that comes out of the proliferation of content that's coming out is in order to create new content and new stories, you have to diversify the storytelling. There's been a proliferation of Christmas shows and movies by about Black folks. And so Jingle Jangle is one of them. But I think OWN, which is Oprah Winfrey's channel, will have a few new shows and movies out this year. And there are a ton of Black movies or Black-themed, mostly cast Black Christmas movies that are out there to access. So we see in the growth of content some positives coming out of that in terms of the diversity of storytelling.
Right. And once again, that was thanks to more outlets. When there were only three networks, all of the, and when there was only a few studios back in the Hollywood era, most of these, in terms of who was cast in them, looked pretty much the same. When cable, with some exceptions, but when cable came out, you had more venues for this. And now we've got places like OWN, BET, all that, who are, by the way, not only making new stuff, but playing old stuff. Within the last 48 hours, you could have seen Almost Christmas, The Preacher's Wife, Best Man Holiday, all of those have played on cable channels, and you can see lots and lots of others. So you can really make, even if you don't have streaming and you've just got cable, you can kind of make your own programming of a holiday special, and you could watch multiple channels 24 hours a day and not run out of.
In the Thompson household, when things get quiet, you're not looking at all this stuff for academic reasons. You got 1 hour. What are you putting on? Christmas related.
For Christmas. You know, the older I get, when I was a kid, I never missed Rudolph, Frosty, Charlie Brown, which, by the way, came out 64, 65, 66. Rudolph, 64. Charlie Brown, 65. Grinch, 66. Frosty, 69. That was quite a decade. And as I got to an adult, I often watch those as well. I don't know if I get older, if part of it is that they may just be wearing out, or part of it is that nostalgia, as you come closer and closer to the end of your life, starts becoming a little sadder than it than it once was. So I'm finding, trying to find, either classics I have not seen or looking at some newer things. I think last year, when we talked about this. You asked me my favorite Christmas movie, and I had become enchanted with Black Nativity, based on the 1960s Langston Hughes play.
So you're in church?
Tonight? You tripping.
As for me and my house, we are going to church.
You need something?
Mom, when are you coming? We're in this together.
Silence is too loud for me.
The Reverend's putting on his Christmas show.
It would mean a lot to him for you to be there.
Today, we are mindful of the needs of this youth, be he in need of guidance or simply a belt to hold his loose-fitting pants up. Amen. Amen.
I've watched that probably since our conversation two or three more times, and I find new things in it all the time. And maybe it is, it's a different voice. It's not yet another watching of Frosty the Snowman. It's something different than insightful. And all the rest of it. So on one level, that's now still my favorite Christmas movie. Though I have to say, Dolly Parton, who is vying for becoming the monarch of Christmas with the likes of Mariah Carey and Bing Crosby and Bob Hope and a few others who really kind of took that holiday. She performed at the tree lighting ceremony, Rockefeller Tree. She performed at the Macy's Day Parade all this year. She's got a new album out. She had a CBS special a couple of days ago. But she also has a Christmas movie out this year called Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, which after I watched the first 10 minutes of it, I was recalling it Dolly Parton's Christmas for the Squares. But by the end of it, I mean, and it's like if you took every Christmas trope and threw it into a blender. There was a divine conception of a child in a woman who had wasn't able to have kids. There's a cancer scare. A little girl gets in a terrible car accident. Romances that have been separated for years. Christine Baranski plays both Scrooge and Mr. Potter, all jammed up into one mashup. I mean, it is one mess of Christmas sentimentality. And by the end of the thing, I was totally bought it. I had a little bit of moisture on my cheek. And in spite of the fact that Dolly is on a cloud for portions of this thing, she's an angel, needless to say, that kind of thing really works. So in an odd way, at the end of Black Nativity, a very kind of literate, high quality film, and at the end of Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square, they both brought me to the same emotional space. And that being brought to that emotional space is valuable. And people can make a lot of money because people like to get there, especially in December. And that's why Hallmark and MeTV and Netflix and Lifetime and all these places are doing it. It's a promise that we can somehow be brought to that feeling of a little tear-jerking, a little good holiday spirit, whatever it is that Scrooge felt when he woke up on Christmas morning and started tossing money at that kid to buy the turkey for the Cratchits. That's what Hallmark wants us to do. We want that feeling, and they want us to toss the money once we get it to them and our subscription.
We do, as a culture, love the Christmas miracle story. Bob Thompson, thanks for hanging out with us. Really appreciate it. And I hope you and your family have a very Merry Christmas.
And the very same to you, Joe. Thank you very much.
Now, if the Christmas miracle storyline isn't your thing, or you've had enough of the emotional payoff that Bob mentioned, there is yet another direction you can go. A direction where the question, are you naughty or are you nice, takes on a whole different vibe.
No! No! Naughty.
No!
With the increasing popularity and scholarly work on the horror genre, perhaps it's time to step to the dark side. our resident spooky doctor, Kendall Phillips, professor of communications and rhetorical studies at Syracuse University and author of A Place of Darkness, The Rhetoric of Horror in Early American Cinema, helps us explore the murderous Santa Claus trope, among other things, for an edgier holiday.
So how you doing, man?
Not too bad, not too bad. You know, just, I mean, it's more the strangeness continues, but how about you? You doing okay?
Yeah, strangeness is the name of the game, I suppose. Hey, look, I wanted to get together and talk about some non-traditional options, as we'll say, for Christmas entertainment. The Christmas entertainment that's out there is usually some real feel-good type stuff, right? You know, you have some stories of redemption or stories of family. There's always sort of a down moment, and then everything comes together at the end. Not everybody's into that. Some people like alternative entertainment. So I thought I'd turn to you to find out what kind of horror options there are for folks that don't want to feel good around Christmas.
I'm glad to be the resident weirdo for you anytime you need a strange perspective. I mean, at the very outset, you could point out that the whole idea of Santa Claus is pretty horrifying. He's a person who knows what you do all the time and breaks into your house one night. So, I mean, it is the setup to most slasher films. And I'd point out, you know, A Christmas Carol, which we all think of as a heartwarming story, is actually a ghost story. So,
yeah.
Not surprisingly, there are actually a lot of horror films set in and around Christmas. So if you want to get your Yuletide horror on, there's lots of options for you.
That's right. A Christmas Carol is a ghost story. There are some sort of creepy versions of it, but it is a real feel-good story in the end. What we're going to talk about, probably not so much. So one of the things I did want to start with, though, is a more family-centered option, and that is A Nightmare Before Christmas, 1993 film directed by Tim Burton, and I think Disney put that out. Is that one that you enjoyed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people always debate, is it a Halloween film or is it a Christmas film? I say it's a both film. It's an anytime you want to watch it film. Absolutely love that film. It is something I watch multiple times between October and December and probably even more than that. I would point out a couple of other kind of family-friendly options. People forget Gremlins is set during Christmas. The Gizmo, the Gremlin creatures, is actually a Christmas gift. And more recently, there's a Netflix movie called Anna and the Apocalypse that came out in 2017. It's probably better for, you know, sort of more teens, but it's a zombie uprising during the holiday season.
Okay. Well, A Nightmare Before Christmas was a really good one. I think it was lauded by critics at the time it came out. And you're right, it does blend the two holidays because the king of Halloween Town, I guess it's the Pumpkin King, is, trying to ruin or take over Christmas. So there's this blend of Halloween and Christmas. One thing that strikes me about it that I enjoyed when my children were young, it's a musical, or there are a lot of, as Disney does, a lot of songs in the movie, and there's some really good ones in there.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a great story. Danny Elfman does the soundtrack and sings for Jack Skellington, who is our Pumpkin King protagonist. And I think particularly right now when all of us have been spending a lot of time in a rut in our houses, away from all the excitement of normal life, this is a great story because it is about Jack Skellington getting tired of doing Halloween, stumbling upon Christmas as another option and saying, hey, what the heck, I want to try something different. Of course, it doesn't go that well for him.
Right. And there are cute scenes meant to be a little scary, I guess. I mean, there is a scene where one of the a child in the movie is asked to open a gift. They open up a box. Mom's like, "What did you get?" And he pulls out a severed head. So
it's classic Tim Burton, the macabre and gruesome, just on the edge. So
yeah.
Probably for some kids, you know your children, this is probably not a film they're ready for. But the kid who kind of likes the spider and kind of likes to look at the creepy thing, this is probably right up there their alley and is a great way to introduce, I think, young children to the prospects of monsters and scary stuff as a form of entertainment. So it's an absolutely brilliant, lovely film.
Yeah. Now, speaking of alleys, you probably don't want to be caught in a dark alley with a killer Santa Claus. So the genre of the killer Santa Claus, let's talk about that for a second. You recommended a episode of Tales from the Crypt back, oh, I don't know, when was that out?
It was the late 80s. I'm going to say 87, but I don't have it right on the top of my head.
Yeah, so
87, 88.
It's an episode that that poses the question, are you naughty or are you nice? Tell us about that episode.
So this, I believe, if I'm remembering right, this is actually derived from a part of a British anthology film with various sort of scary stories. But this is a deranged killer escapes from an institution. He carries his axe. He comes across a Santa Claus suit, and he torments people with this really terrifying way of saying, are you naughty or are you nice? It is absolutely chilling. It's one of the few examples of television horror I can remember really, really scaring the bejesus out of me. So if you can track this down on YouTube or someplace, it is it's called Tales from the Crypt. Absolutely chilling.
Now, you said you were scared when you saw it back in the day. I think if you watch it now, you can't take it out of context because I think there are some tense moments, but it's hard to get by or get through the movie without laughing at some of the acting. I mean, there's some real over some bad direction and some bad acting. Here is a part of the final scene of that show.
Chimney. I let him in. No! No! Ah! Ah! No! No! Ah!
Naughty.
No!
Or nice.
No! Ah! Ah! No! No! No!
Well, now she's screaming no. She's just standing on the stairwell with this killer Santa Claus standing there with an axe just staring at her. I mean, there's opportunity to do something. Jump off the steps, land on his head, take the axe. I don't know, but it's just...
Hey, this is my childhood trauma, and I'm entitled to it. I still remember this being absolutely terrifying, and the way he says naughty or nice, the whole show is based on the little girl, the woman's small child, thinks this is really Santa Claus, and so the more she's trying to keep him from getting into the house, the more the little girl's trying to let him into the house. It was made for television. Obviously, it's not going to be quite Exorcist Texas Chainsaw level horror, but I think it's a great example of this subgenre of the killer Santa Claus.
Now, in that subgenre, should we note, or do we know, or I'm sure you know, there aren't any examples of an actual like evil Santa Claus. These are like deranged people who are dressed as Santa Claus mostly, right? Killers who are in a Santa Claus. Are there movies or shows where Santa himself is a slasher?
Well, there is actually. So there is a film called Sint, where Santa is a supernatural evil creature. But you're right. Most of the kind of slasher film version of the Santa story are some traumatized crazy person taking on the Santa Claus costume to go around and kill. The one I remember as a kid was 1984's Silent Night, Deadly Night, that spawned a lot of controversy, and actually some states tried to censor it because they thought it was just so inappropriate to have a horror slasher film set around Christmas. But it also spawned 4 sequels and a reboot in 2012. So it was a fairly influential film, even as it was relatively controversial.
And quickly tell us about Krampus.
Yeah, so the other version of Santa, of course, we in our Western and Northern European traditions have Santa Claus as a benevolent figure who comes to reward the nice and leave lumps of coal for the naughty. But in other places, particularly Central Europe, there's a different tradition, which is the Krampus, which is a kind of half-goat, half-demon, and this is in places like Austria, Croatia, Czech Republic, etc. And in this version, the thing that we would later call Santa Claus actually comes to punish wicked children. So it's quite a horrifying creature. This is still celebrated in large parts of Europe with parades and costumes. There are a whole series of movies around Krampus, of which my favorite, that probably is the easiest tie-in to our traditions, is a 2010 film called Rare Exports, where people accidentally dig up one of these ancient creatures that looks a lot more like Santa Claus, and all kinds of craziness ensues. Hollywood tried to pick up the tradition in 2015 with a kind of bigger budget Hollywood film called Krampus, but it didn't quite take off. I'm not sure American audiences are ready for a half-goat, half-demon arriving for Christmas.
I don't think we are. Hey, man, this is Kendall Roberto Phillips, professor at Syracuse University and horror enthusiast. Thanks for giving us some not-so-traditional options for Christmas.
Thanks, and happy holidays to everybody.
That will do it for another Christmas Holiday Pop Life special. Join me in thanking my guests, Bob Thompson and Kendall Phillips. Past episodes of Pop Life can be found at WAER.org, where you can find last year's show on our favorite versions of A Christmas Carol. And never miss a new episode by subscribing to Pop Life wherever you get your podcast. Have yourselves a merry or scary Christmas, and a happy Hanukkah, and a safe and happy New Year. I'm Joe Lee. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. We'll see you in 2021.